safe from Biden's incomprehensible word choices today. The Kate Daly Show starts now.
The great dictators and tyrants of the world have always dreamed taking over the world, but everyone tried it the wrong way. And everyone has discovered that military will not work. You cannot police and militarize enough to take over the world. So the Illuminati in 1776 developed a whole new concept of how to pull this project off. Instead of trying to force people into a new order or a totalitarian dictatorship under military, which you cannot do because people are always going to rebel at that, the idea was developed by Adam Weishaupt to create enough violence and create enough chaos and enough shit to frighten the world so that the entire world of mankind would one day come to the conclusion that there's too much bloodshed, too much crime, and there's just no possible way for the human race to exist unless we come together and pool our resources and all of us accept one government and one order, and we will all live together in peaceful, happy, under one family, and nothing can be further from the truth.
That's how it got started, the Illuminati, and that clip was right. I mean, it's farther from the truth than you could ever imagine. And this thing that we're being lured into as a nation is common, collective, one world government, one world religion, one world everything, one thought. Can't have another thought. Got to learn how to disagree better. You can't possess any individual anything. And that's really, truly where it's going. And it's the biggest lie of all. It doesn't create peace. It's not about shoring up some love. Not about that. It's about globalism. Communism is really what it's about. And those clips. It's hard. It's hard to, I digest that. I get it. But because no one will play it, I have to play it. So our guest, of course, is Mel Madison, and super happy about that because we love Mel over here at the show. And MelMadison.com, MattisonMelMadison.com, MelMadison.com, and of course the book Quaz. And I always love your visits, Mel, because you always bring something rather fresh and interesting and thought-provoking, and I really like that about you. So we just love you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. You want to talk about a bill introduced last week. Please.
Exactly.
Go ahead. Yes.
Yes. I know it's not as important as the fact that it's going to get hot this summer.
It's going to get really hot because it's summer.
I think those are more important stories to let people know that, they might need to turn on the air conditioner in a couple months. But yeah. This is one of those things that, it doesn't get the airplay, and it just goes in, to the congressional record. A bill gets put out, but it's a very, very important bill. It's called the Loomis Gillibrand Payment Stablecoin Act. And let me break that down a little bit, because I know not everybody is into cryptocurrencies and things, but I'm going to relate this to how it essentially is a backdoor central bank digital currency bill.
Mm-hmm.
But so for those not familiar, there's generally kind of three types of cryptocurrencies. I'll call them cryptos. There's Bitcoin. It's something that we've talked about before. It was kind of created by who we don't know to act like a digital gold.
Some Japanese guy with some infamous weird name.
Yes.
And yeah, I mean, it's so ridiculous that they even made it anonymous. I mean, they couldn't even proffer up somebody like a Zuckerberg, who's the front of Facebook. But go ahead.
Exactly. Satoshi Nakamoto, who's who it goes by, but nobody knows who it is. The second one is, there's coins that sometimes like exchanges or people will issue, like FTX, Sam Bankman-Fried did. And then the third type of coins that are out there are what's called stable coins. Mm-hmm. And they're essentially a way that their big innovation is that they allow people to send money without having to go through a bank, without mm-hmm. having to pay fees. And what they do is let's say you put $100 into a stable coin. The stable coin company who oversees this takes that $100 and puts it into a short-term U.S. government bond, a T-bill, like a 30-day T-bill, just like a money market fund, basically. And you get like 4 or 5% interest, mm-hmm. and the company makes a little bit of that interest. They take maybe 0.5%, and you get 4.5%. And then what it allows you to do, it allows you to send money anywhere. So you know, if businesses take these stable coins,
it's like wiring it. Is it like wiring something?
Yeah, it's like wiring money, but it's instantaneous. It's free. You can lock out people like Visa and MasterCard, so people can take these stable coins on their businesses and they don't have to pay 2.5%. And everything is handled through private companies. So there's nothing on its face that's really diabolical about these things. They're not being, taking the money and investing them into, Iranian arms deals or something. They're going into U.S. government bonds. Okay. But what is subversive about them is that they're a way for Americans to kind of hold their money and send their money without it being in a bank, without it being under control and auspices of the Federal Reserve, without it being under the strict regulation and control that comes with being a bank. And so Senators Gillibrand and Loomis, so a Democrat and a Republican, Loomis is a Republican from Wyoming, Gillibrand a Democrat from New York, they introduced this bill. And when you look at the bill a little bit closely, you see what it's all about. They literally state in the press release that this bill is critical to maintaining U.S. dollar dominance. They talk about it is going to guarantee that the Federal Reserve retains its role as the guardian of money creation. And so what it is it just shows these stable coins, which are essentially a private sector solution to sending money and holding money that's outside of the banking cartel, are a real threat to these people. And so their solution is not to ban them, but it's to make all these stablecoin issuers hold all of their assets in essentially banks, depository institutions is the term used, and then be under the auspices of the Federal Reserve and take away this private sector solution and incorporate it into the Federal Reserve banking system.
Well, that makes me feel better.
I love absolute control. Uh-huh. Nice when our government's at the helm, too. Yeah. It makes me feel like soft and...
And everybody loves the Fed.
Well, I mean, who doesn't? And so it's nice to know that they want to take absolute control over stablecoin too.
And it said what no it shows ever. Really. Oh, go ahead. I'm
no,
sorry.
Just said no one ever. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, this is like the danger to it. This is really why I brought it up, is because it brings them out from behind the curtain. Because what people have to realize, we've talked about this in other shows, I won't get into the details, but when you're forced to put your money into a bank, what you're really doing is you're then allowing that bank to turn around, to loan it, to do right. fractional reserve banking, to essentially do backdoor money printing. The private sector, the Federal Reserve prints money, but banks also print money. When they take in $100, then they loan you $100, and then that person loans it to another person. It's called fractional reserve banking, and it's a money multiplier effect. It's how we get more money into the system. And then the other thing that it does is that all of this comes under the Federal Reserve, where they have what they call reserve requirements, where you have to deposit the money with the Federal Reserve, where everything is in this, international cabal-like system underneath the auspices of the Federal Reserve. And what stablecoins are is they're just using technology to create a private sector solution that does an end run around that. And, theoretically, constitutionally, there's nothing in the Constitution that I read that said people can't come up with innovative payment systems, mm-hmm. right?
That aren't controlled.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. They're like I said, they're using U.S. Treasury bonds as the backing for this. They're using the dollar. So what they're really subverting is they're subverting the banks. They're taking away the bank monopoly on holding people's deposits, on paying out interest, and on complete control over using that money for fractional reserve banking and inflationary policies and all the rest. So beyond the fact that you're now going to have banks able to see these transactions in more clearly and enter into what they call programmability around money. Somebody could come out with the law, well, we don't want you to buy so much fossil fuels or so much ammunition, and, you know, we're going to freeze your stable coins now, which, you know, when they're not under the banks, they can't really do that. But what they're doing is then they're also presenting it as, well, we need to do this to protect like illicit activities and stuff. And the thing you have to understand is that these stable coins are not unregulated. They're just not in the banking system. They're regulated under something called money transmitter laws. And they're subject to the same things. They're subject to the Patriot Act. They're subject to know your customer rules. And they'll feed you that this is for stopping terrorist financing and all that. It's all regulated under state regulators. It's just not under the Federal Reserve and in the banking cartel. And that's what this law does.
I'm so glad that you brought this to our attention. It's like the last caller we had. Everything has to be in a bill, and then they pass the bill and we lose more freedom. And this is all about cementing it, even though it has rules. This is cementing it under the control of the Federal Reserve. Uncle Milty?
Wow. Is there anything, Mel, on the horizon about making bartering come under the control of the Fed, too?
Oh, I'm sure there is, and I'm sure they're going to want to find a way to tax it, because they're going to say, well, you didn't barter fairly, and you know, you didn't get a good deal, so somebody made a profit. They do not want one transaction, one bit of commerce. They do not want any individual liberty, and the core of individual liberty is commerce. It's freedom to own private property, to enter into transactions. I mean, there's two fundamental, I would say, expressions of freedom. And one is speech, and the other is and by speech, I would include religion and, and your belief system and your thought. And then the other is commerce and transactions. And they cannot allow freedom of speech. They cannot allow freedom of transactions. And, you know, it is part and parcel of the tyranny. And this bill, which, you know, I did look into the senators behind it and found some interesting things. But it's one of these bills that comes out as bipartisan. And there's even with some scuttlebutt I was hearing, I guess there's some sort of bill to fund the, I think it's the FAA, the Federal Aviation Agency or something, where if it doesn't get funding, they're going to have to shut down all the airports. And they're talking about attaching it to that bill. So, you know, nobody's going to talk about it in the mainstream media. They're going to talk about how it's going to be a hot summer. And then, you know, this bill is going to get pinged on to some, you know, innocuous thing. Like we need to fund the FAA for the next 12 months. And then, boom, there goes, you know, the control, you know, or there goes the control right into their hands, just like they've been moving Bitcoin into the financial system and putting it into ETFs.
We're going to come right back. More with Mel. Uncle Milty?
As of today, all 50 states, bartering is legal.
Wow. It hasn't come under that yet. Wait for the bill. Be right back. Kate Daly Show.
Keep pounding a rhythm to the brain.
Hey everybody, just a quick note about gold prices. I just wanted everyone to realize that April 5th, it was gold at $2,305, record day before, to compared to $2,271. Gold is going up, and as we had our guest on from Birch Gold describing last, it's not actually kept up with the inflation amount, so it should be probably around $5,000 an ounce, but it's not. This is the time. Get in before it achieves that. You're going to want to make sure that you have gold and silver on hand. Silver's up today. Just make sure and get in and get to Birch Gold. Birch Gold is who I trust. So I'm telling you, this is who I trust. Get your gold and silver from them. Highly trusted Ron Paul, Steve Bannon, even Donald Trump Jr. go to Birch Gold and are very outspoken about that. I mean, they have the 5-star ratings and been over 20 years in the marketplace. They're also very red-pilled. So this would be an excellent time before it really goes up. It's only going to go up. That's the prediction. If gold is now in a bull market, what is everyone going to pretend bear levels are, right? And we have to really look at the solid data. Protect yourself against inflation, against deflation, against economic uncertainty right now. Just at least text that number and get the information, 989898, and text my name, Kate, as the message. Thanks, you guys.
La-da-da-da-dee. La-da-da-da-da.
This is the Kate Daly Show.
Welcome back. Kate Daly Show at your service. We've got Uncle Milty on board. We have... Fully on board. Completely here. We also have the great Mel Madison with us, too. And that's always a treat because he always has some great info every single week. I love Mel Madison.
I have a question, though.
Okay.
How did he earn the title great so fast? It took me 8 years.
I put up with Uncle Mildy. You know, I'm just kidding.
I always get a kick about that one. I point that one out to my wife after the episodes.
I bet you should, actually. Use it for some cred. Look at what the show calls me. I mean, come on. No, I love it. The book is Quoz, Q-U-O-Z. Get the book. Amazing book. And then also melmadison.com. You're working on. We'll get to great at some point. Uncle Milty. So he used to say that, too, with Chris Ann Hall whenever she would come on. And then I'd be like, and then there's Uncle Milty. You know, just teasing. Birch Gold, make sure and text 989898. Get things solidified. They're playing so many games right now. And if this isn't telling you something about this bill that Mel's bringing up, this very quiet bill that he's bringing up that's going to urge its way through, and I'll bet you it goes through, is Fed control over stablecoin. They're setting up all the train tracks. They're doing all these things across the nation to throw us into digital currency so they can use some sort of emergency, I feel like, is what they're going to do. To do it, is everything solidified for you? If it's not, if you don't have your IRAs and your 401ks and your savings all backed by physical gold and silver, please, please, for free information, totally free to do, just takes a second, text 989898 and text my name Kate, and they're going to give you some information on this. Okay, you need to learn more. At least make a decision based on some solid information. Okay, Mel, you kind of did a deep dive on Kristen. She's a horrid senator. You've got Kristen, and then you've got Loomis from Wyoming.
Yeah, definitely. And just to echo what you just said before I get to her is, I mean, I do think at the end of the day, there's not any bit of difference, really, if this law were to pass between using a common stable coin today and a central bank digital currency. Right. And so that's another thing is like they know the people don't want the central bank digital currency. And if it's under the Fed, if it has to go through the banking system, if it's going to go on all the same technology, the same wires, the same rails, the same infrastructure, if it's going to be under, you know, FDIC in case there's needs to be a shutdown of one of these things. I mean, really, what difference is there? It's a central bank digital currency by any other name. So just wanted to point that out.
But, thank you.
Kirsten Gillibrand, so, you know, we were talking at the break about how they really think, I think, hard about how to present this to the people. And they picked two women, you know, one of them from Wyoming, a Republican, very kind of matronly looking. Then you have Kirsten Gillibrand, you know, a lawyer from New York. And you look into a little bit of their background. And at first you might think, why do they have a Wyoming and a Democrat from New York? What's the connection? So the first connection is that people may not realize it, but Wyoming and New York both have one big thing in common. They're both actually very big banking states. Wyoming has very business-friendly banking and trust laws, and a lot of people use the state charter laws in Wyoming to set up banks and trusts, just like New York has a lot
Great
of banks.
Point.
So as a percentage of the economy in Wyoming, you might not think financial services is a big percentage, but it actually is. So we know who butters both of these people's breads, who campaign funds their campaigns. And you look at Gillibrand, and she's such a creature of
Jekyll
like
Island.
The swamp, basically.
She's a creature of Jekyll Island. Oh, gosh.
She's a creature of the swamp. She's an attorney. Mm-hmm. Then she goes to work in private practice, works for these shady lawyers that represent people like Harvey Weinstein and Theranos, the defunct startup. And even the way she was, you know, brought up, I don't know the details. So I'm not going to talk about someone's family, but it is interesting when your parents are both lawyers, when your father is a lobbyist. I mean, you think about those connections that start from the time you're in the crib of understanding the way the sausage is made in D.C., how things happen.
And a 13% Freedom Index score. I always go to Freedom Index score by the New American because it's the most honest score. The other think tanks aren't as honest, but Freedom Index score actually is pretty honest. 13% of the time she votes for the Constitution. 13% of the time. Could you get a lower score? It's amazing, isn't it? And we'll talk about Loomis when we come back, too. I want to talk about a lot of things. When we come back, be right back with Mel Madison and Uncle Milty.
This is the Kate Daly Show.
Go. One, two, three.
Yes, I'm back. KateDalyRadio.com. KateDalyRadio.com with the great Uncle Milty. Even though he teased me about eating animal crackers early on when he first got here and made fat jokes. It's okay.
I made no fat jokes.
Kind of, but whatever. I'm overlooking it. The only reason I had animal cookies is because I actually have them for my grandkids and I didn't have anything else to grab as I was leaving the house and I grabbed those. So I grabbed a bag of them.
Yeah, and it's a main rule of radio. You have to have snacks.
You gotta. So I'm eating animal not really crackers. They're more like cookies today. I know. Terrible diet choice, but whatever. I could care less. And so anyway, we have Mel Madison joining us and the book Quaz. I love this because he's bringing to us a bill that hasn't been talked about. We haven't talked about it on the show. And I love that he's pointing this out, that the Fed wants to, if you're just joining us, the Fed wants to co-op and control stablecoin. And they already have rules. They already have things they have to go by. But this is like a co-opting of control. Right, Mel? I mean, I don't know how else to put it.
Yeah, exactly. At the end of the day, the money is not in the banking system or under the Federal Reserve now. Right. And this bill moves the money into the banking system and the Federal Reserve, which they are terrified of. They're scared to death of it. And anything that threatens their monopoly and control over money has to be immediately taken care of.
Wow. Kirsten... is really, did you want to mention that about her schooling?
Oh, I mean, these are just some things. I haven't spent hours and hours researching these people, but you just see these little bits and pieces that just make you scratch your head.
Gillibrand, Senator from New York. Gillibrand is who we're talking about. Gillibrand. Senator from New York, if you're just joining us. Go ahead.
And I mentioned how, you know, she's an attorney, kind of suspect law firm. Her father and mother were attorneys. Her father was a lobbyist. And, you know, while she was at Dartmouth, she majored in Asian studies and did part of her 4 years in Beijing. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just, you know, bringing this about, like, you have to think about some of the deep relationships that get formed when you're a young person. And if your father's a lobbyist and you study in Beijing and you do these things, you know, you have to think the connections and why would, like, she be a person that'd be, okay, this is someone we want on this bill. And I kind of, you know, took a look as well at Loomis, the senator from Wyoming, to see what I could find on her. And there were some interesting tidbits there as well.
Okay. Talk about those, because here you have Gillibrand, who is a junior Hillary, okay? More attractive than Hillary, same clause. And then you have, and she has a 13% Freedom Index score, okay, at the New American, which is the best scoring system I've seen. So 13% Constitution score. That means that only 13% of the time she's actually voting for the Constitution, yet she's been in since 2007. Amazing. Kirsten, little Kirsten, and really raised up by two parents into this field so that, and also her, I should have played my China girl by Bowie. So my little China girl, then you've got Loomis who is, got a better score. She's between 80 and 88%. So I always think they put these two to kind of sell it. I think they're using Loomis to kind of sell it because she's less popular than the horrid Gillibrand. But she's from Wyoming, right? And you said these are two bankings, these are two heavy financial states, okay? So what is it about Loomis?
Exactly. And she is like a Hillary Clinton of the Gen X or whatever. Mm-hmm. She was put in there
Gillibrand
as a replacement. Yeah, Gillibrand for Hillary.
Brand,
when Hillary went to become the Secretary of State under Obama. So she didn't get her seat in the Senate by, you know, getting elected. She was placed there.
She was installed. Then, that's another point to make, too. Installed. Sorry. She was installed. Mm-hmm. And this is what they do. This is why I mentioned my own congresswoman was installed, too. They install them and the person leaves so that they can install. Then they do endorsements to hide election fraud. So everyone always thinks the endorsements is what got them in and this heavy incumbency got them in. But really, it's a way to hide election fraud. Okay, sorry. I just had to just make that note really quick. But go ahead on Loomis. Sorry.
Okay, exactly. And so Loomis, she's someone that tends to just have her fingerprints on a lot of some of these banking financial services issues. She is known as the Congress's crypto queen. She's been heavily involved for a long time in Bitcoin. And her husband, her late husband was a Democrat, Wyoming state senator. And, you know, she's a lawyer and been involved in politics. And you look at, you know, what is her reported net worth, in 2007, it was 20 to 75 million. And you think, how do these people that are state senators and, you know, attorneys in Wyoming, not that people can't make money being an attorney in Wyoming, but these are phenomenal amounts of
you don't
of
make
net
that
worth.
Much in Wyoming as an attorney. Sorry. There's mm-hmm. just not the cases that you would make that much. Yeah.
Exactly. Milty going to say something?
Yeah, Milty.
Well, she did come from a ranching family, historical ranching family in Wyoming, which probably built up quite a bit of generational wealth. But she's also on the on the Commerce Committee and the Banking Committee.
Yes, Gillibrand is not on the Banking Committee, but she is. That's interesting. Loomis is.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's not surprising to have someone from New York, because if you're from New York, you know, that's where the big banks, you know, that is the banking center of the globe. So, you know, even if she's not on the banking committee, you know, she's got those ties into the JP Morgans and the Goldman Sachs's and the Bank of America's of the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, so the point with this, with taking a look at her, is she might have voted for the Constitution 88% of the time. Lot of the time, a lot of the times, you know, things that are pro-business, pro-capitalism are also, you know, in line with the Constitution. Mm-hmm. But what you often see in Congress is you can kind of see people's true colors when you start getting into areas that are pro-business but not really pro-Constitution. Where do they diverge? What are those mm-hmm. divergent bills? And to me, this is one of those divergent bills where you have an independent payment system that's set up, that's functional, that mm-hmm. is regulated, but it's not under the control of the banks and the Federal Reserve, and now this bill has to insert this alternative banking system. It's really an alternative banking system that's sprouted up organically, has to be smashed into the Federal Reserve cartel mm-hmm. organization.
One thing about these people too, when we're talking Constitution scores, we're always talking about the bills they're voting on, but not necessarily what they're doing about restoring any liberty. So there's never any scoring on what did the person do. They talk a lot of talk, and I know a lot of people like this, even in my own state. They talk, or senators even, they talk a lot of talk, but they don't actually do anything proactive. Has anyone done a bill against omnibus? No. They don't do anything proactive. It's always what they're voting on other people's bills, but not what they're actually doing themselves. And I think that's sad that we don't have a score to reflect that, because they don't do anything. Milty?
You know, even though Gillibrand's lifetime score is only 13%, in the last two Congresses, it's 0%. 0% constitutional votes for the 17th and 18th.
Yeah, it's 13 lifetime, but zero.
Zero for the last two Congresses.
I don't know if you can get more pathetic than that. That's pretty pathetic. But this is a state that feels it's important to realign your cheese packaging. They don't want extra packaging on cheese sold. So this is the state that it scares me. New York actually scares me because they are so atrocious. They should actually be in another country, the whole state of New York. It's not reflective of anything based on principles in America whatsoever. I've never found New York to be anything reflective of that. Seems like everyone that's there has a horrifying score, like mini Hillary's, like Gillibrand is. We're going to come right back a little bit more with Mel when we come back. And scary stuff, Mel. I mean, we don't realize how this is working out for us with these bills. Be right back. Kate Daly Show, katedalyradio.com. Okay, you guys, if you go to bed thinking about it, you wake up thinking about it. Okay, here's the truth. Credit card debt, the system traps you in debt. High interest credit cards and loans make it really impossible to pay off your debt. So as this inflation's going to keep going, as we've been reporting on the show, done with debt is a great way. It's a lifeline, in other words. It's a great way. It's an ingenious new strategy to help you erase your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. I really love these guys. I'm telling you, the work they're doing is great, or I wouldn't have them as a sponsor on my show. Done with Debt analyzes all the debt options you qualify for, and then they know how to reduce the bills faster. They know how to cut interest rates. They have a very, very skilled staff of negotiators, and that's what you want, right? So without bankruptcy, without a new loan, just go ahead and get with them to understand how to do this. Done with Debt are the experts in these brilliant strategies for eliminating debt. Tell them the show sent you. You need to hurry because some debt solutions are kind of time sensitive. So go to donewithdebt.com. 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 You'll love these guys. I promise. They're so good at what they do. Let's get some peace of mind.
This is the Kate Daly Show.
Well, I don't care what you think about me. You put me through so much pain.
Welcome back to the Kate Daly Show. I got Uncle Milty over there. Great Uncle Milty.
Great. Yeah. Let's not forget that.
I'm going to come up with all kinds of adjectives. And also, Belle Madison joins us, of course, because it's Tuesday. He joins us every Tuesday and always has great info for us. And so I really appreciate him. And we have a couple more things to say before we leave the subject with Loomis and Gillibrand. We're really showing how it works, too, how they push bills through and they utilize certain folks for these bills. And so tell us a little bit, Mel, just a little bit more on Loomis from Wyoming.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, just to prove my point a little bit about kind of the state aspect of what Wyoming has, they have these state trusts and state banks charters. And on their own bullet points for the bill, on their own press releases, they say this legislation preserves the dual banking system, parity of state and federal charters as it is today. And so to unpack that is a little bit is, you know, Loomis wants to make sure that her small Wyoming banks don't get cut out of the picture. And then Gillibrand's protecting the big guys in New York. And so they're preserving the system today. And so when you look at how the bill does this, is it allows these smaller banks to operate and have stable coins in state regulated non-depository trust companies up to a point of $10 billion. So a small Wyoming bank can do some of this same activity. But if you look a little bit deeper into the bill, you'll notice that the legislation requires non-depository trust companies, these are the type of Wyoming entities, to use a sub-custodian that is a depository institution. In other words, a Federal Reserve regulated bank. So that, yes, the stablecoin could be operated by a small Wyoming state trust, and it could seem like it's kind of an independent, you know, great wide open skies, Rocky Mountain wholesomeness. But at the end of the day, that money's going to have to, according to this legislation, go into a depository institution. And all of this will be under the supervision of the Federal Reserve. So the Federal Reserve will get to regulate all the big ones, mm-hmm. and then to take action against the state ones, it says strong provisions establish guardrails, and that action can be taken against the under 10 billion ones as long as it's with the Federal Reserve and the state acting jointly. So it's just letting the states keep their control. But everything is in the depository institutions. It's in the Fed. It's in the banking system as it is today. And so, that's the big threat that can unite a Loomis and a Gillibrand, that can unite these two people who seem like polar opposites in what they believe in. But what's really scary is when the banking industry and the cartel is threatened, they can get to both of them. It doesn't matter who, you know, you don't need to be a flame-throwing liberal. You can be someone like Loomis, who rejected the certification of Pennsylvania's electoral votes for Joe Biden and seems as kind of MAGA conservative as you get. But when the cabal wants you, they can get to you. And that's what this shows.
At the end of the day, it's always going to be banking wins, money wins, and they will take their influences and be very bought and paid for in the bills they construct. And this is all about the states not having those rights because they're jointly partnered with the Fed, with the Federal Reserve. So the Federal Reserve really has the ultimate control. So this bill is all about stablecoins being under the auspices of Federal Reserve control, 100%.
Exactly. And the Federal Reserve, the 12 regional banks, as we've talked about before, are owned by the member banks. They're owned by J.P. Morgan and Bank of America. So when I say Federal Reserve, don't think Jay Powell and the appointed Board of Governors. Think about the 12 Federal Reserve banks, the New York Fed, the Cleveland Fed, the Richmond Fed. These are owned by the member banks, which are the private banking sector, which is the international financier elite class that is the modern day heirs to the Rothschilds, mm-hmm. pulling the strings just like the Rothschilds did in 18th century France or England. Nothing has changed.
So like we say all the time, when it comes to talk show hosts across the country, my fellow conservative talk show hosts, many, many, many will tell the truth, but at the end of the day, they'll protect the elite. They'll always protect the elite, always. And I've got so much proof of that, it's not even funny. Then when it comes to these people in government, they can show you signs of, I'm for this, but at the end of the day, they'll always protect the money. The money, the money, the money, the banking. It'll always be about that money. Yes?
Yeah, I think it's, you have to look who's in real charge, who's at the very top of the pyramid. And it's obviously not Congress people. I mean, let's get real. I mean, if anybody in this day and age thinks Congress people are some independent body that is truly making laws in the best interests of America, they're nuts. And this just proves it.
You know, it's so true. They have their own banking, which I did a deep dive on years ago. This was like even pre-scandemic. When I did a deep, deep dive on the fact that they have their own credit union subject to the laws that are really not subject to the laws of this country because of where they're located. They have their own banking institution to hide their own banking, which the founders would be rolling in their graves to realize this, to understand this. That's what's so diabolical about this and so sad to me is that you have so many of these people that think it's okay that they have their own separate banking, their own separate little credit union of sorts where they can hide all their money, where it's not subject to anyone else, only them and their advisors, which is so amazing to me. Let's take a quick call. Caller, make it fast.
Okay, I got a quick question for your guest, Mel Mattis.
Okay, go.
So I was told that if we paid off our national debt, it would extinguish the entire quantity of money in circulation, it would be impossible because interest represents more than the amount of money in circulation.
Okay.
Is there any truth to that?
Is there any truth to that, Mel?
Yes, 100%. Money is gold, nothing else. What dollars are credit. They're created by the issuance of U.S. Treasury bonds. Debt is the creation of what we call money in today's world. And, you know, just really quick, I mean, this is the quote from J.P. Morgan, money is gold, nothing else. The other two quotes that start my book, Quaz, permit me to issue and control the money of a nation, and I care not who makes its laws. I mean, the cartel doesn't care what laws you want to pass about what's on a state flag. They don't care about that. What they care about is who's controlling the money. And the last quote was from Jefferson in 1816, banking establishments are more dangerous than standing armies. This is about control of the money. That's what they control about, care about, and that's why they can get to anybody on it.
Wow. Thank you. I'm so glad you answered that. Mel Madison, the book is Quaz. Go get it. Seriously, you're going to want to read this book. I'm not kidding. He goes into a lot of areas of this that we've talked about even in this hour. So thank you, Mel. Appreciate you. And
thank you.
The great Mel Madison, of course, with a great, fantastic Uncle Milty. Be faithful, be fearless, as we say in every show. If you want to find out why I say that, there's a story behind that. Go to katedalyradio.com. Katedalyradio.com. Signing off for the day. See you tomorrow. Thanks, you guys.